Final hour, Robbie and Rex Rowe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Rowe, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning. And we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are you?
What's going on, guys? How you doing this morning? Oh, somebody got up late.
I did. Let me tell you, man. I almost missed the show. I woke up and I was like, wait a minute, it's light outside. That's not typically what's supposed to be the case when I'm waking up. But I got there. I got to my upstairs computer office anyway.
Do you think the universal reaction, because I did this repeatedly in college. I always would miss my 8 a.m.s. I would wake up late. And do you think everybody's universal reaction when they blow it in the morning is they open their eyes and they go, man, it's a lot of light out.
I was so because I thought my alarm went off and it didn't, and I was like, man, it's so weird. It's not usually this bright at 4:45 in the morning. Wow,
I'm telling you, I think that's the universal human reaction. Is it should not be this light right now? Like something's wrong.
Hold on, man. Yeah. You scheduled 8 a.m. classes. My earliest class after my freshman year was 12:40 p.m. What are you? Yeah, what are you talking about?
My junior year, the first time, like, so I had like a studio apartment off campus, and I had an 8 a.m. math class. This is because I'm an idiot. Ugh. And it was a hike across campus. And probably my most memorable blow it moment, it was finals, or it was midterms. It was snowy out, it was horrible. And my little studio apartment was like over like a office complex. So every morning people would be coming in the parking lot, and I had a window right next to my bed, and it was a really small studio apartment. And I wake up, open my eyes, and I'm like, it's totally light out right now. Like I look and it's like 7:55. Right. And it takes me 15 minutes to get to my math class, 20 minutes, whatever. I immediately jump out of bed, scream like a profanity. And, you know, I'm in my underwear, nothing else. And I'm standing right next to the window, and I turn to the right, and there were like, had to be a half a dozen women walking into the building, the office building below. And I'm standing next to the window.
Look at this screaming naked man.
Yeah. And we like screaming profanities at us out the window or through his window as he's naked. Yeah, it was awesome. Needless to say, I made it, but I think I squeaked. Like, I passed that class by the absolute bare minimum. Like, it was a like 61% type of grade.
Math sucks.
All that matters is you passed. It's half the reason I'm in this business, because there's less math.
That's right.
There's very few algorithms. I ask other. I anytime there's a math problem, I call a cap guy. I'm like, anything
exactly
for me.
Exactly. So, Charles, it's been as you can imagine, a very busy week around here on the Nico Iamaliava front. I'm just curious, from your perspective from afar, what do you make of what all's gone down with Nico Iamaliava, and has there been any buzz in NFL circles about the decisions that he's made?
Well, I do think it's interesting. Like, first and foremost, I'll play devil's advocate here for a minute. It's from the NFL perspective, I don't think anybody's unhappy to see him get out of the Tennessee offense, because I know evaluators just don't like that offense. They don't like it really for any position almost on the field, even running backs. You know, like, I go through the running back stack this year, obviously a prominent running back that's in this draft. And when you talk to people about him, they're like, there's just so much space that this kid is running through. And it makes it really hard to know, you know, what it's going to look like when he's in a bunched up formation and just doesn't have these running lanes. The wide receivers, it's always like they don't line up on the line of scrimmage enough. Like, it's just wonky, or the splits are crazy. You know, the quarterbacks, it's almost like it's difficult to evaluate almost anything they're doing, from a schematic and read coverage standpoint. And it's, you know, like when you hear like Hendon Hooker, you see the Lions sign Kyle Allen, and then they basically see like, hey, Hendon's got to win the backup quarterback job. Like, it's a rough go in the NFL right now for Tennessee quarterbacks, which is, it just is what it is. So when you go to Tennessee, you know that. I mean, like, we know that by now. So anybody who commits to the quarterback spot and then later says, well, it's the offense. I mean, you've known this for a while now. So it's a little hard to believe that that ultimately is what drove this. I agree with you guys. I think it's money. And but that said, I will tell you that NFL, even though they don't know what Tino Sunseri is going to run at UCLA, NFL types would like to see him in a different offense. And, you know, it's probably going to be RPO based, basically what Indiana did. There'll be a ton of pre-snap motion, which is fine. A lot of NFL teams love to do pre-snap motion now with the receivers. It'll have some more sort of pro-style leanings, and maybe the formation, the width of the formation will be more something that NFL guys can really understand and evaluate properly. So from that respect, I don't think it'll be bad for them. But that said, the messiness of how this went down is not attractive. And it will certainly be something that someday he will have to go through a vetting process when he enters the NFL draft. And I guarantee you this will be one of the prominent things where they're going to ask, like, what exactly happened there? And, you know, how did this all play out? And I'll say this about the NIL era, and I may have said this on the show before, you do have a lot of people in the NFL that are like, we used to have this prominent question about, like, how does a player and his family grapple with money? We don't have that anymore because we see a lot of it now in college. You know, it's like one of the very few silver linings, you know, other than probably the quarterback transfer portal that the NFL enjoys. But now they don't have to ask a kid, what does it look like when you get money, or you and your family experience money? Like, is it going to cause a lot of like off-field stuff for you? Or is there going to be a lot of drama, like football related drama now because of it? They're getting some of those answers, and I guarantee you that's going to factor into his NFL vetting experience.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah, that's my thing I hadn't thought about the money aspect of that, how it actually is a little bit of a benefit. But I think people have overstated a little bit. Like, the NFL's going to be, you know, look at him like he's a selfish kid and all this stuff. It's like they're gonna ask the questions. Of course they're going to ask questions. But that is a really – see, I still believe, Charles, that, you know, like, there's going to be a quarterback that comes out of this offense that ends up being a great quarterback in the NFL, and it probably takes away some of the concerns. But until that happens, Sure. Everything you said, I mean, it's fair, right? It's just they do things you can't do in the NFL, which I would not change that. If it works for you and you win, great. But you do wonder at some point if it becomes too much of a narrative.
And the thing is, too, Joe, you don't know how NFL offenses are going to adjust moving forward. Like, the funny, like, people think it's NFL down. It's not. It's college up. Like, a lot of things that get changed in the NFL come from the college level. And, you know, so, like, it's interesting because I think even, like, the formations, like, how they're like, how does your line of scrimmage look as an offense? You see some teams, they're way more stretched out than they used to be in terms of the width of the formation. And I think that comes from the college level. And another thing I think is sort of forcing it from the NFL standpoint is they're having such a hard time grappling with like play ready offensive linemen because the offensive linemen are coming out so much less developed or doing NFL, quote unquote, NFL type stuff that, you know, teams don't have a choice but just to take guys and hope that they can either coach them up or find a space in the middle between what they were doing in college and what they, you know, historically have been asked to do on the NFL level and figure it out. So, it you know, 10 years from now, the NFL's offenses could look a lot more like Tennessee's offenses. Like, who knows? But it's definitely – and I think Tom Brady's talked about this. It's affected the quarterback position where you just have a different kind of quarterback now coming into the NFL. And I don't think it should be a surprise that – some of the guys, particularly out of last class, that had a lot of success immediately were older players who had entered the portal, had moved around a little bit, experienced different things. Sean Payton went on and on about Bo Nix, like how happy he was to see him both in the Auburn offense and the Oregon offense to go through, you know, a lot of like kind of adversity where he had people basically saying his career was done, he was bust and all this stuff. I don't think the NFL is unhappy, particularly with the quarterback position when it comes to the portal, because they're like, hey, you know, it takes kids who might be in a situation where they're never really going to have an opportunity to develop where they are, or they don't, you know, like their surroundings or whatever. They can move to a different spot and then maybe jumpstart their career. The Nico thing's a little different, you know, because he had success at Tennessee. Projected out, it looked like it would be a lot of success at Tennessee. But I'm not going to lie to you, like his evaluation was going to be difficult coming out of Tennessee the same way it was for Hendon Hooker and Joe Milton.
So Charles, we're sitting here a week away from the first round of the draft, and I'm trying to look and see where Shedeur Sanders is going to go. So I guess my question for you is this. Do you think that it's a guarantee that Shedeur Sanders is the second quarterback taken in this class, or could that change maybe more than people think heading into next week?
Yeah, I don't think it's a guarantee. I don't. So first things first, like, got to dispel what kind of happened with the Giants, because I think it projected, you know, oh, the Giants are having a workout with Shedeur. It's so late. We're pressed up against the draft. And, you know, is this ownership? Is ownership stepping in and pressing the pick at three? No, it's not. This was on the books, guys, for a while. And it was because Shedeur told teams, look, I want to get the pro day in, and then I can do private workouts. I'm not going to do private workouts with, you know, 15 teams or whatever, but I want to do my private workouts after the pro day. Well, the pro day was late, you know, we're talking about all the way into April for the pro day. And then by then, you know, you have a number of teams that are like, okay, just from a schematic standpoint of like who we can get together to put on the full kind of pro day we want, our window is like mid-April, which is why you're seeing the Giants bring in three quarterbacks. Shedeur, Tyler Shough, and Jalen Milroe in this window. It's not suddenly indicative of, oh, they're pressing the panic button on the third pick and, you know, they have to find, you know, Shedeur now being forced in there by John Mara. That's not the case. It was just scheduling. So now it doesn't preclude, I think, the Giants are moving up out of the second round and trying to get a quarterback who may be sliding in the first. But I will say this, we did the all juice team. And you end up talking to a lot of executives, a lot of scouts, a lot of, you know, personnel people, some coaches. And the quarterback stack from 2 to 5, which would be, you know, Shedeur, Jackson Dart, Tyler Shough, and Jalen Milroe, there's a lot of really differing opinions. And it's kind of fascinating to hear, you know, where people are approaching it from. And one guy in particular that, like Milroe, I'm surprised as it's getting closer. I've talked to a number of teams that are like, look, it's because it's such a, it's a difficult quarterback class because there's not a bunch of elite guys. So you start to look for elite traits. And there's definitely an agreement that, and I think it's across a multitude of teams, that when you look at Milroe, he has a bunch of elite traits in terms of, you know, size, arm strength, but his running immediately could be utilized. Like, it is ready to go, like, on the highest levels of quarterbacks that have come into the league. When you think about Lamar Jackson, Michael Vick, I mean, Cam Newton, he is viewed as being that kind of runner immediately, hitting the ground. So they're like, already you have this aspect of his game that is elite and will be elite from day one in the NFL. You could put him on the field in an RPO situation where you're really designing a run for him, and he's gonna tear it up for you. And so then they get beyond that, and they're like, all right, his passing needs a lot of work. It got considerably better from 1 year to two. Maybe it would have taken 4 years to get it together. Can you now draft him as a backup and then spend a year or two really ratcheting on his passing, really refining what he does? And so I think that has led some teams later in the first, like, that might just sit at their pick and go, you know what, we feel like we got a quarterback for the next year or two. Let's grab Milroe, and we'll take the elite level of his game, which really raises his floor as a player, because we know he can do this. And then we'll figure out, you know, how we can refine him as a passer and spend a lot of time on that. I wouldn't be surprised if Milroe ends up being a first-round pick, like, where maybe right at the tail end, a team that wants 5 years control either moves up or, you know, figures out a way to take him at the tail end of one. But I, you know, Jackson Dart, to me, like, if you ask me right now, what does the stack feel like? I'd Cam, probably Jackson Dart. And then I think there's kind of this argument right now over, is it Milroe or Shedeur at the four spot? What do you like? Yeah, it's really.
Wait, at the four. Wait, so you have Shough too ahead?
No, I think Shough, the thing about Shough is he has, in terms of like the NFL readiness, he's, look, the size is all there. His arm, you know, anytime you talk to evaluators about him, they talk about just the splash of the arm talent that they see. And but he's, you know, the age is there. I mean, there's a lot of advanced age. Some teams are like, is this Chris Winkie again, where we're getting a guy in his late 20s and, you know, it's just never going to really fully materialize. Others look at him kind of the way they looked at, I thought, the top end of, like, Hendon Hooker evaluations. It was like, hey, look, if you feel like he works and you get 10 years out of him, that's fine. That's great. That's worth even, you know, a late first potentially. But I would not put, I think now when I look at it, I would not be surprised if all five quarterbacks end up being off the board by like the 34th or 35th pick. Like that, you just see this car crash at the end of the first round, the beginning of the second round, where all these quarterbacks suddenly get, you know, snapped up, and whoever wasn't able to move up in the first round has some candidate to take at the top of the second. The one thing that might jam this up, though, is interesting. I had a couple of teams tell me, like, hey, so far, you know, not like there's really advanced trade talks going on, but it feels super rich to try to move into the top of the bottom of the first round. And I'm thinking, like, is this Howie Roseman at 32 who's basically telling the Giants, like, yeah, you really, we're going to let you move to 32 and get whatever quarterback is sliding and you get 5 years of control over him? That's going to cost you a lot. But I think there is kind of a belief that at the end of the first, it's a little richer to trade up into those picks. And part of that, I also think, is assessments from, like, I had one guy tell me, hey, picks 15 to 75 are going to be insane. He's like, probably the toughest draft to understand how it will unfold is because, like, picks 15 to 75, you could see similar grades on players from picks 15 to 75, which is bananas. And so it really just comes down to, what do you value? What are you selecting for? What's your need? And, you know, I think it's going to throw a lot of teams for a loop. So the quarterbacks are, like we said this all, I mean, I think when we started this, I was like, Shador is going to be the story of the draft. I still believe that 100%.
So, okay. So yeah, cause this is fascinating. The Milroe thing's fascinating. So first of all, the information you're getting, at least it does kind of match up with, like when they announced that he was going to be at the draft, I'm like, what? Why?
Right. Yeah, me
so
too.
Clearly, like that matches up with. And I get that. We talked about it yesterday. It's like, look, if you designed something where you are emphasizing the running as much as you are, you know, to me in this league, a lot of guys are going to fall apart if they run the ball that much. But he is a big, strong. I mean, he could be an incredible runner. That's really fascinating. So when you say the story, so are you saying Shedeur Sanders could be the fifth quarterback and go in the second round? And
No, I don't. I mean, look, can you find someone in the NFL to tell you that they think that? Yeah, you can. But I tend to discount it. I think that, you know, there's enough, like, he really is a good fit at nine for the Saints because of, you know, he has a limited athletic profile, but I think I told you guys before, like, if you get him in the right situation, with the right offensive mind, and I think Kellen Moore is more than fine. He, you know, Dak Prescott, limited athletic profile somewhat, and Kellen did great things with Dak. You put Shedeur in a place in New Orleans where he plays in a dome, eight to nine home games a year, depending on the flip-flop of the 17 games. And then he's playing warm weather Tampa, fairly warm weather Carolina, dome in Atlanta. You know, that's like 11 to 12 games a year in favorable conditions where you don't have to really worry about, is he have to drive? You know, like, it's when you're talking about Cleveland, he matches up really well with Kevin Stefanski. I don't know that he matches really well with a stadium that's on the, you know, on the water, where it's like you're driving a ball into wind, and you get into December and January and it gets a little horrific. And I'm not saying you can't do that. I'm just saying, like, if you're really trying to take him and put him in the most favorable spot possible, I would want an offensive head coach. I would want it to be a dome. And I'd want it to be in a conference where guys with maybe a somewhat limited athletic profile can play, you know, fairly well. So nine, I think, look, 21, Pittsburgh's, I believe Rodgers ends up there, but I do think Pittsburgh is still locked in at potentially taking their next quarterback at 21 and sitting them behind Rodgers. And then I think when you get to the tail end of it, the Rams don't have a second round pick. And I'm just telling you, like, inside that building, there was some consternation, and there has been some consternation with Matt Stafford has, you know, missed some games the last few years, and his production has not been MVP caliber because of these missed games the last few years. And it's like, they've never really had a great answer, especially when they didn't have him to play. They're like, we need to start finding someone. So I think 26, the Rams, that's definitely a team that's in play. All the, you know, Browns, Giants, you know, Raiders, all those teams, I think when you talk the tail end of the first, the top of the second, what the possibilities might be in terms of like trade ups, I think those are all candidates. That's why I think you see a cluster of quarterbacks that really come off maybe between like 28 and 35. But yeah, I'm just telling you with Shadur, I do think it's going to be the team that, like, it's just like Bo Nix and Denver. It's going to be the team and head coach that really has a lot of belief in him, feels like they can build the right offense around him, and feels like that he's in the most favorable, like, landing destination in terms of what teams he's going to be expected to play, what elements he's going to be expected to play in. All that stuff is going to factor in, which is, when you have this conversation, that's why I think Milroe is so interesting now, because when teams are just like straight up, this dude can run like nobody can run. Like, it's such a huge part of his upside that you're like, okay, well, we already have this. It's like a bird in the hand. Now we just have to develop this other really obviously very important part of his game. But teams are egotistical. They're like, all right, we can do that. Give us the guy that has this super elite trait. And by the way, is big, like he's got a frame. He's strong. He can throw a ball a mile. Like we can figure it out with that guy. And I think that's why it becomes a little bit of a struggle when you look at Shadur and you're like, yeah, all this production and stuff, but athletic profile is definitely limited. He's probably a little bit of acquired taste in terms of his confidence. It's just kind of interesting when you now are getting into the nitty gritty with these quarterbacks and you realize that it might be more of a scramble than we really believe. And remember, because of Penix in Atlanta last year, we don't know if there's not some insane chaos moment with a quarter. That has to be on the table now, which is why you hear, hey, the Arizona Cardinals, like, could they take a quarterback? And ultimately, you know, the owner wants to move off Kyler Murray as soon as that contract becomes dumpable, which is in a year. The Miami Dolphins, you're like, what are they doing right now with Ramsey? Is this a rebuild? Like,
yeah.
And you have to be concerned about Tua. And again, that's a situation where you're probably 2 years out from being able to move on from the contract, but you also need a quarterback that can go in and win games for a sustained period of time if he suffers another concussion. So there are potential chaos picks too.
That's really, really fascinating stuff. Well, Charles, we're a week out from the NFL draft. Looking forward to our conversation next week. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us today, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
All right, sounds good, guys. Have a good week.
Yes, sir. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest here on Robbie and Rexrod. I want to react to what Charles had to say there. Some really interesting stuff on the quarterback front in the draft. And Joe, later on in the show, as we wrap up, there is a wild story that has come out that is kind of related to the Nico Iamaliava saga that I
want
to get to as well, that you're not going to expect. Like, of all the things you would be thinking about, this would not be one of them. I'll get into it later in the program. All that coming up. Robbie and Rex Rowe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning. Don't miss Nashville's best NFL draft coverage on the Game Nashville Sports Network. We'll be broadcasting live from Twin Peaks in Madison on April 24th and on Friday, April 25th, live from Boomba's Pizza and Watch Bar in East Nashville. Coverage begins at 6 o'clock each day, presented by Hardee's, Parman Tractor and Equipment, Twin Peaks, Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, Shanko, and Professional Home Improvements as well. It's Thursday on 102.5 The Game, Friday on Sports Talk 830. Appreciate Charles Robinson for being with us in the last segment. So, Joe, I'm going to leave it up to you. What do you want to do first? Do you want to react to what Charles had to say on the Shedeur Sanders front, or do you want to get to this wild story that just came across my desk here as it relates to Nico Iamaliava?
Yeah, that story is great. It's whatever you want. I mean, the Charles, I think that was a fascinating Charles segment. I mean, his stuff is always fascinating, but man, there's a lot to unpack from that with, I mean, we could probably get into some of this tomorrow even too, like the Milroe thing and all of
it. Let's just start there. So what do you make of, like, he seems to think that there is a good chance that Shedeur is not the number two quarterback taken in this draft, and that he may not even be number three. I think he talked about Milroe maybe sneaking in there. What did you make of kind of the way that these quarterbacks could fall, according to what Charles had to say there?
Yeah, well, the Shedeur thing, I mean, people have talked about that, of course, and I think he's exactly right. It's just like which team feels which way about which guy. I mean, I'm looking at ESPN right now on Get Up, and they've got – I've seen a lot of this week. Is Tyler Shuck a franchise QB? There's a lot of buzz with him right now. There has been at different times, you know, obviously Jackson Dart. The Milroe stuff today, though, fascinating. And we did touch on that yesterday. And it's – you know, it's a – I still think it's a risky proposition. Like, yeah, if we can just develop that one part, you know, passing the football, I mean, that might be important. But, I mean, he has arm talent, right? I mean, it's, you know, it's like with Anthony Richardson, although we didn't see, obviously he tested off the charts, the most athletic quarterback ever. We didn't see that run necessarily, that just – absolutely take over a game run ability much at Florida. I think he probably has more of it than we've seen, but also he can't stay healthy. And he's a great cautionary tale for if you think this is the way you want to go, you better make sure you got a guy who can stay in one piece. But right. If Milroe can, it is a fascinating idea. Like, build the offense around that and put teams in such conflict, because he is. I agree with the idea, like, of the running QBs we've seen over the last few decades. Put him up there just in terms of that skill, pure speed with power, which you would hope would translate to durability. We'll see in this league. I never assume durability with anybody in this league, but he does have the frame. You build something around him. And we know, again, he has arm talent. He makes tremendous. I think he throws a very good deep ball. It's just the inconsistency and missing so many throws last year. I thought he got worse, but that's fascinating. And it kind of does a little bit answer the question of how the heck is he going to be in Green Bay on this thing. But if he goes in the first round, first of all, great for him. And another thing about Milroe, for people who, like, if you didn't follow, you know, because I've been around him a little bit covering Alabama games, he's awesome. Like, he must be destroying it in the interviews. You know what I mean? So that's another thing that you throw in here. Like, teams are, you're immediately going to love the kid. So that's another aspect of this. That is fascinating to me. And then, of course, you know, Shedeur, that's been, I mean, he remains, like, probably as fascinating an individual story as there is in this draft. He could go top 10, top 5, second round. That's, you know, going to be fascinating.
I mean, is Jackson Dart going to end up going, like, third overall in this draft? Are we going to get to that point?
See, then the interesting thing about that is, you know, remember, like, Dart essentially, although it is different and people have had different offshoots, but essentially he's coming out of this same offense we're talking about, right, with the Tennessee guys, you know, and it doesn't seem – I have not heard a lot of, like, talk about how that's holding him back, you know.
Right.
So that's another thing to keep in mind. But, yeah, all these guys – and, again, I just – it's just maybe it's just me, like, what doing this show is the only time I really, like, watch, like, these ESPN argument shows, and I don't listen to them. We just have them on the screen. I feel like Tyler Shuck has been everywhere this week.
Yeah. I you know, he's interesting because, you know, Stille talks about him a lot. Obviously, he watched a lot of him in college and thinks that he's a backup quarterback. You know, it is going to be wild if it gets to this point next week where, you know, Charles talked about it. You could see five quarterbacks go by, like, pick 34. If that happens in this class, with how much people have talked about this class and how down it is at quarterback, I think even though it is quarterback and people go nuts on that sometimes, I think I'd still be stunned if it works out that way by the time, you know, the early part of the second round rolls around next week.
I agree, but he did bring up those two teams. Very interesting. The Cardinals. Yep. if they want to get rid of the shorter, faster Cam Ward.
Yes.
Then obviously that's
better Call of Duty player, better Fortnite player.
Yeah, maybe. And then the Dolphins. I mean, it is a great question. Like, what are they doing? So apparently they're out there, and I know Stilley, speaking of Stilley, got his pants down, as he likes to say, for this idea of trading for Jalen Ramsey. But why are the Dolphins just about to give him up for nothing?
I don't know. Like,
that tells me you don't think you're going to be competitive this year.
Yeah,
or he's just so unbearable that you feel like you're going to somehow improve your overall bottom line by just getting rid of him, which is part of why I said, what are you talking about, trade for him? I would not do that at all right now.
Yeah, maybe they think it's addition by subtraction at that point. But then again, then there's the other stuff that I think you naturally have to wonder about now with the Dolphins. Like the injury history with Tua and the head injuries with Tua have been so concerning. As Charles said, you probably can't actually move on from the contract here for another couple years just based on the sheer volume of the money that's attached to it. But, do you want to go ahead and start to get in front of that if you're the Dolphins and give yourself some insurance just in case he goes down again, which nobody wants to see. But at this point, I think you have to be prepared for if you're them.
Yeah, rather than have Snoop Huntley backing him up and playing on Monday Night Football, have your young QB who you figure probably is going to have to play some games, and then when you can move on, maybe at that point you actually have an upgrade. So that's a really, really interesting team to watch. And, yeah, it is wild with a bad QB class that we might see that many, but that's what QB is in this league. I mean, QB in this league does crazy things to people. Also, the 15-75 thing is really interesting from Charles there. We've heard variations of that, but yeah, if you really think about that, again, middle of the first round and middle of the third round, you might have grades that are very similar. Pretty interesting.
That is pretty wild. 615-737-1025, our phone number. Got some tickets to give away to see Cake at the Ascend Amphitheater coming up this Saturday night. Be caller 5 at 615-737-1025. You'll win a pair of tickets to see Cake. We'll continue to take your reaction to Charles Robinson and some of the thoughts he had on the quarterback front. Plus, there's just a wild story that I want to get Joe's thoughts on as well coming up next. We'll do all that. Robbie and Rex Row, 1025, 1063, The Game. Robbie Rex Road brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. So we're going to have a lot to get to on tomorrow's program. We will continue the discussion on the Predators and the future of Andrew Brunette. We'll give you the latest on the Nico Iamaliava and quarterback front for Tennessee, and we'll obviously get more into what Charles Robinson had to say on the Shedeur Sanders quarterback front as well. So we got a lot to get into on the program tomorrow. Joe, I want to get into this story really quickly for you, which is just a wild story here. So there's this pastor from East Tennessee named Josh Sullivan who was preaching in South Africa last week. And he got abducted at gunpoint. It's a crazy story. It was horrifying. He got abducted at gunpoint. His family was apparently there, and he was being held for ransom. Anyway, so there's this rescue operation apparently on Tuesday in South Africa where he got rescued and was he was unharmed in the process. So I want to read something from On3 Sports. It's actually from VolQuest. I think Grant Ramey put out there. And this is just a small snippet from it. Quote, Josh Sullivan, the East Tennessee pastor who was rescued from a kidnapping in South Africa during a shootout on Tuesday night, was upset to hear the news of Nico Iamaliava's departure from the Tennessee football program. Sullivan was abducted by gunmen while preaching a sermon late last week and was rescued after being held in a house 20 minutes from his Baptist church. Fellowship Baptist Church pastor Tom Hatley told WVLT that one of the first reports he heard from South Africa after the rescue was that Sullivan was, quote, upset over Nico. If that doesn't show you the power of SEC college football, Joe Rexrode, that's some wild stuff.
Say it with me now, Kaharski. SEC! SEC! God, that's freaking amazing. That is absolutely. You know, that's that story is It's like the tree poisoner, dude, except it's like more uplifting. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, here. You want to know what SEC football is? Here you go. Except Harvey Updike is like, that's like awful. This is actually kind of uplifting. So I think is now the new good example of SEC football story.
It's like, hey, man, are you okay? I know you just went through this horrifying experience. And like, you know, apparently this is a pretty intense rescue where like, you know, I think the gunman may be dead. Like what they just went through with the police, and his concern after it was like, man, you know, I think I'm okay, but I just don't know who's going to play quarterback for Tennessee.
What's up with Nico?
Nico left us high and dry. What's going on?
Absolutely amazing, man.
I saw that like Andy Staples tweeted about it, and he like tagged Ari Wasserman in the tweet, and he's like, hey man, if you're ever wondering like what our audience is, it's this guy. This is our guy right here.
Exactly. Hey, on the college football front, to get to real quick, they have passed some rules this morning. So I don't think this is enough, but they have passed a timeout penalty now on the fake injury thing. So okay. I think that's a good step, you know, and I'm not going to get into all the – but essentially now, if it's clear that you're faking an injury, you can be docked a timeout. If you don't have one, then it can be a delay game penalty. So I think that's step in the right direction. I still like the idea of if a particular player is doing that, that player misses the rest of the series. I think that's, you know.
Yeah.
I like that better. I know that's a little harder to deal with, but at least there's something. You had to do something about the fake injury thing.
Yep. I'm interested to see how they, like, enforce that moving forward because I'm with you. Like, I'd kind of like to see – you're out the rest of the series there, and is
it's
that
after the ball is
you?
Spotted. So, you okay. know, so okay. in other words, you know, so in other words, teams going fast. That's when it always happens, right? It's like,
just drops down,
right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it should clean it up some.
Joe, congratulations on getting your real ID. I know it was a big point of emphasis today on the show. People were very concerned. I'm glad you got it.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you to the people at the Driver Services Center for. For dealing with me, and now please, please, please get me my real ID in time. Please.
That's gonna do it for us today here on the program. We'll see if I actually, you know, can wake up and show up to work tomorrow. Chasing Big Joe is coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.